Hi, I'm Amy Halloran. Welcome to another Food Diary.
No, Amy. I think we're going to Guys, I'm sorry. I'm not sure what... We're getting a UPS delivery.
Okay.
And my dogs are... I currently have two dogs. My sister's dog is here, and they're both losing their minds.
Right.
So, unfortunately, my house is small enough that there's nowhere I can go. Can we hang on just one second?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. This is right at the beginning, so we don't have to deal.
I'm so sorry.
No problem.
Oh, my goodness, guys. Hey, barley, whiskey, barley, sit, barley, whiskey, whiskey, sit. It's all right. It's all right. You're all right. Oh my goodness! Yeah, they're both really kind dogs that get very worked up over package deliveries.
I can understand. It's exciting stuff.
they're really into defending the household, and they're as you can probably hear, fairly large dogs, and they both have some. They don't look like it, but they both have some Rottweiler in their. They're past, so their barks really
they mean it. They mean
it. All right, guys, are we done? Has the package been? We're still in process, but yep, he's leaving. Okay, I think the house was successfully defended.
Awesome. You're still there. You can still talk.
I can still talk. I haven't been attacked by the UPS man yet. I'm pretty sure he's done. Oh, boy. Can't tell.
What are you getting delivered?
You know, it's probably actually stuff for my friends in Egypt, because apparently it's very difficult to get certain, like, you can't really get international deliveries. And so, say you want a book. You can't order from Amazon in Egypt. Say you need medicine, that's like a pretty common drugstore thing here. You can't get it there. So they're shipping, they're having a bunch of stuff sent to us. We're going to bring an extra suitcase over to Luxor filled with things like a laptop for one of their coworkers and stuff like that. So
awesome.
I'm guessing that we're getting another delivery of, like, you know, just like household goods or something like that to fly to Egypt with.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah. Man, this is taking forever. We're almost done. Come on. All right. Come on, Dax. Come on. Come here, Whiskey. Come here.
You want to take a picture of me, Felix?
Quite the dog names.
All right. Now they're okay.
Okay.
I believe we can now start. Thanks, Amy.
Sure, sure.
Sorry, Felix.
Fine.
Okay, here we go. Hi, I'm Amy Halloran with another Food Diary. Oh, cut it out. Hi, I'm Amy Halloran, Food Security Manager at Unity House with another Food Diary focusing on women in grains. With me here today is Aaron Dietrich, who runs Signal Fire Bread. Aaron, welcome, and thanks for coming along.
Thanks, Amy. Thanks for having me.
Oh, so thrilled. Can you tell us a bit about your bakery and where
Sure.
people can get the bread, where you make it, and where people can get it?
Sure thing. As you said, my bakery name is Signal Fire Bread, and I am based in Cold Spring and selling here in Cold Spring, New York, right now at the Cold Spring Farmers Market, and at Marbled Meat, a great butcher shop in town, and Cold Spring Cheese Shop, and there's a restaurant called Dolly's down on the Garrison waterfront that gets my bread. So it's a fairly small network, but all right here in Cold Spring. But I'm actually baking up near Hudson, New York, in Livingston, at a bakery that was recently put into play by Sparrowbush Bread, and Antoine Guerlain is the head baker there. And we are sharing space in his wood-fired oven and bake shop, and sharing labor and ideas and all kinds of things back and forth with our bakeries there.
It's so,
but,
Cool. And I've visited this bakery, so I have to say that it's in a former greenhouse, which is quite an extraordinary setting, among the many extraordinary things of this handmade bread, hand milled, lots of new stuff going on inside there.
Yes, it's a beautiful spot. It's on an organic hemp farm. And, yeah, like you said, there's that greenhouse aspect on one side of it. So even in the middle of the winter right now, if the sun's really kicking up in the middle of the afternoon, you go out there, it's beautiful. And it's certainly unlike any baking experience I've had so far. I've mostly worked in, you know, windowless rooms, basements, things like that. So it feels really special to be in a space with windows and a view. And also to, yes, have access to that stone mill and dual arm mixer and that wood-fired oven that Antoine built. It's all really special stuff, and it definitely, I think you feel it in the bread, too.
I bet. The human touch is a real ingredient, and humans touching beautiful things adds up to great. The reason I invited you here is because you're a woman and you've worked in this baking field for a long time. I'm kind of collecting anecdotes and opinions and musings on what it is to be a woman in this field. With that introduction, what do you have to say about the experience?
I'm very proud to be a woman baker, certainly. And I was very lucky that early on I had a couple strong women bakers in one of my early jobs to sort of guide and teach me and show me ways in which women operated in bakeries. Because starting out in New York City, there's a lot of guys in the bakeries, and that is changing somewhat, but it's still a fairly male-dominated field, which I'm sure is why you're one of the reasons why you're asking this question. And I have to say that I had some good role models, but I did also have to really, really work to prove that I could handle everything that the men around me could handle. And I think there's an assumption based on my size and gender sometimes that maybe, you know, handling a 5-deck oven was going to be a little bit too much for me. And I think some of these assumptions I feel were made without even having the conversation with me. And it took me seeing that I was just going to have to throw myself into the hard stuff and ask for the opportunities again and again and really, really work to get to them in a way that I didn't perceive maybe a male coworker who was like twice my size, but certainly no more intelligent than me, getting that slot at the oven right away. So it's certainly something I thought about a lot, is the ways in which just being a woman sort of made me have to put myself out there a little bit stronger, a little bit harder.
Was there ever any point where you wanted to say, quit it, I can't take this kind of environment where I have to prove myself so often?
Happily, no. I was never in an environment that was that intense. I was very lucky in that I have worked with people who, once I did prove what I could do, they more than happily gave me the things that I wanted to do. So I happily was not ever in a truly toxic environment. And I think I was very lucky in that. And I think that was also somewhat due to me sussing out situations before taking a job.
And seeing that you had the capacity to move through them rather than run up to
exactly.
Too many walls. Yeah,
exactly.
That's
exactly.
Great. What, you know, looking, you and I have been at events together where there's a palpable sense of dudes overlooking women in the room, even at very progressive baking events.
Yes.
What's up with that?
Such a good question.
Mm.
Such a good question. I think part of it is just that ingrained sexism and gender disparity that we still have across the boards, where women are being invited on the panels more. Women are being involved, I think, as head speakers at big events more. But I think there's still a lot of guys who are looked to as the experts, as the sort of old guard, and there's a way that that new guard can still even fit into that somehow and feed that energy, that we look to men as the, as the leaders. And some of it is, I think, just the issues that you see across fields of there still being more men in leadership positions than women. And I think changing that is really what it takes for those voices to be at the forefront, because we certainly have just as much to say, I'd say, and just as much experience in many cases as the guys. But it's baking has been a male, professional baking has been a male-dominated field for so long, and, you don't really see as many female millers as you see male millers. You don't see as many female bakers as male bakers, even in the supply industries and all the things that we need to be bakers. You're dealing with men most of the time. And I think when that's the case, it's just easy to sort of still fall into those male-dominated, vocal patterns. And I'm not sure why that is.
Yeah, I think it is going to take generations of change to unpattern the habits that we've grown up in, because you and I are close in age. I'm in my 50s and you're not there yet at all.
Late 30s.
And so, we grew up in a generation where there's this assumption that feminism happened and we can do whatever we want. And then in our careers, we've seen that, that's not quite the case. So it takes generations of unpatterning habits of looking to men, giving men opportunities to really be able to shine a light on the female leaders and create more female leaders. So I guess it's just I'll give the world a pass for now, and if my son's generation still experiences the same habits, then I'll give up.
Right. Well, I think that's right, and I think that it is. I do feel that change happening, certainly within myself, because yes, like you, I was raised with, I think, a little bit, but as much as I was raised in a household where I was told I could do everything that I wanted to do, and certainly there was nothing I couldn't do that a man could do. There were still just a lot of cues around me that put guys in charge. And I do think that's changing within myself. I do believe that that's changing more, period. And we just have to keep fighting as women and speaking up, and I include myself in that, to put my voice out there a little more strongly and a little more often.
Yeah, that's great. And we'll keep breaking open those blistered crusts. Something like that.
Exactly.
Bad bread jokes. So let's talk more about baking and grains themselves, the exciting work that you are getting to do. Tell me about the grains that you're using in your bread.
I'm currently working with pretty much all New York and Pennsylvania grown wheat and rye and spelt. I'm getting all of my sifted wheat right now from Farmer Ground Flour in Ithaca. And I talked to Greg Moll, the miller there, quite a bit about the flour. And so it's been great to have a lot of interaction and question asking and, points taken and given on what's happening with that grain throughout the year. And then I use a lot of fresh milled whole grain flour from Antoine at Sparrowbush. He has a stone ground mill from New American Stone Mills. And It is in weekly action. So I'm getting spelt from him and rye from him. And he's been doing some really cool stuff with einkorn recently. And I'm going to start, I think, collabing with him on a bread he's doing that's 100% einkorn, and probably start selling some of it in my neck of the woods that he's been developing in his neck of the woods. So it's been kind of exciting to have crossover like that. And let's see, I'm trying to think if I'm missing a grain right now. I'm also using whole wheat, I guess, leaving that out. I'm doing a 100% fresh milled whole wheat dough and getting all of that from Antoine. And he's sourcing from places like Hawthorne Valley and other neighbors in the Hudson Valley region, and then Small Valley Milling right now. And we're looking further afield to Maine, too, as we move into this year, and some grains we might start bringing down from Maine Grains and some other places. So there's a lot of I actually saw him today, and we're constantly sort of talking about the next potential source of grain, like no matter what kind it might be, that we can start working into what we're doing.
It's so exciting to me what you guys are doing together. That you are sharing the infrastructure of a small bakery so that you two can each help each other out without having the large capital, without both of you having the large capital investment that all of these serious pieces of equipment require. And then you have the social capital that you're exchanging, the work knowledge as you play with different grains, as you understand your markets and your customers. You're just diving into such a great, or you're creating such a great opportunity to really dive into what a small bakery can be. And I really love that.
Agreed. It's really exciting. I feel incredibly lucky that this sort of constellation worked out. And I have to thank you for being one of the people who mentioned his name to me and said that we should meet, because we didn't even know each other a couple of years ago. But it has been incredible. And I should also say that Antoine actually did do all the initial capital and fundraising for all the equipment there. And as he was sort of doing that, we started talking about ways that we might collaborate. And the initial way was basically that I was, you know, not in any way free labor, but labor in exchange for space to bake some of my breads there. So I've been baking a smaller percentage of breads there. He does the lion's share of the bread. It's his bakery, and he has a lot more contacts in that area already because of his wife Ashley's farm, Sparrowbush Farm. So initially the arrangement was that I was helping him make his breads and spending a fair amount of my time on that in exchange for that space to get my breads made. And we kind of started to realize that we were both making each other's breads. We were really, truly collaborating more so in just a more organic way than it even felt like it was going to be when we outlined it at the beginning. And we're now moving into a phase where we're hammering out an actual agreement between us where I am paying into the space on a percentage in the same way he's paying into the space. So I now am going to be taking on more of the sort of financial work of the bakery through my bread. And we're in new territory. We don't have any models, like you said, I think, for exactly how this works, because we don't know anyone who's doing this exactly. So we're still sort of hammering out what's fair and what makes sense. And the thing we kind of keep coming back to is the common good. Is this, like, in all the decisions we're making and in the ways we're working together, are we working for the common good? And if we are, then we're heading in the right direction. So it is really exciting. It's on so many levels to have this really great space to work in, and also to have the exchange of knowledge and expertise and similar lines of questioning and thoughts as we make our breads and hone what we want to make and how we want to sell it and where we're selling it and what's working in that and what's not, to have this partner in a way, although we're not officially partners, to bounce all of that off of while we both build our businesses is crazy wonderful.
It is. It's such a good constellation or aggregation of humans.
Yes.
And I think there's room for more of this. You've worked in other, I'd like you to describe a little bit some of the other bakery contexts you've worked in that made you know you wanted to step back to a smaller scenario.
I started out really early on at Runner and Stone Bakery before I had actually become a baker full time, and I apprenticed with Peter Endres there, who's a wonderful human.
I adore him. I had no idea you worked with him. Yes.
Yeah, that was my. He took me on when I really didn't know what I was doing at all, and let me come into his bakery every weekend. I was still working a full time job in theater on the weekdays, and he has a very small space that he is working out of, and that was where I started, and I loved what he was doing and the creativity that he was putting into his range of stuff from pastry to bread out of this tiny space, but I didn't stay there. I moved on to larger bakeries. I worked for Danielle Ballou's restaurant group, and then I went to She-Wolf Bakery, and She-Wolf grew immensely in my time there. We were only doing one farmer's market a week when I started, and I think I started the week that farmer's market started, and then otherwise it was just restaurants and not a huge amount of restaurants that we were serving. And I think by the time I left, it was up to 5 or 6 farmer markets a week, and now they're doing even more, and they're doing amazing work. But I think over the process of me working there and working my way up there and seeing the ways in which systems changed and the staffing requirements that were needed to produce that much bread and the infrastructure that was needed in terms of deliveries and even accounting and bookkeeping and that sort of thing, things that were built in because we were part of a restaurant group, I started to realize that it was that I loved what we made there, but I wasn't looking to start a business that was going to continually scale up. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I still feel really strongly about and that I also have a lot of questions about, because there's certainly a lot of financial considerations in that kind of way of thinking about a business. But it just feels to me like there is a hard cap on when it switches from a really human scale to a more sort of factory-like scale. And it is harder to just do the bread that you really want to do. And there can be a kind of vicious cycle of needing, to make more bread, to make a certain bottom line, meaning you need more labor, and then suddenly with that increased labor cost, you've really got to try to squeeze a little bit more bread in. And any bakery, you're always going to be pushing up against the limits just about as hard as you can. I think that's part of bakery work and part of the economics of bakery work. But I think there's also a way, and I think I've seen some models for that, of being clear about how far you want to push that and trying to build out a structure within that space rather than, 5 years it's going to be here, 10 years it's going to be that much bigger, 15 years that much bigger.
Right. There's a lot of touch points you have to keep making to get aligned with what's going on. And so we first met when you were exploring what was your next. And I just so love the next that has happened. The shape is really wonderful to see, Aaron. And I want to thank you for talking with me about it. And I look forward to people seeing more. So let's remind people that to look for your breads down in the lower Hudson Valley, the mid-Hudson Valley. I don't know how you're characterized there. Cold Spring?
Yeah, lower Hudson. I don't know.
Lower, I guess, down in the Hudson Valley as opposed to up here in the Hudson Valley, Troy. And please, world, pay attention to Signal Fire Bread and Sparrow Bush Bakery and their collaborations. There might be an upcoming conference opportunity to sink your teeth into their work.
Thank you so much, Amy. It's so great to talk to you.
You too. This has been another Food Diary, Women in Grains, with Amy Halloran, Food Security Case Manager at Unity House.